You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer, so let's bring her out. The star attraction, the one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
You decide that you're gonna go on a Greyhound bus. Did you know you were gonna go to San Francisco, or you didn't know where you were going?
Yeah, I guess I did. So okay. What happened was, a couple of the guys that were Boston Comics and that were very well regarded
right. In
the hierarchical social strata that there was,
right.
they went to San Francisco. And now this is pre-cell phone. I assume they knew there was the San Francisco Comedy Competition. I didn't right. Know that at the time, but that may have been their destination the whole time. That may have been the whole plan. The way I understood it was they got out there and it turned out there was this competition and
right. They
joined. They went to different places on the way out. I can't remember if they drove or if they flew. I don't recall any longer. But they would call the payphone at the Charles Playhouse. And we would all gather around the payphone.
Wow.
And there was a woman named Pat Ritz, who was one of the producers with the Comedy Connection. And not a performer, but just, you know, but she was everybody's connection, you know, she was the Consuelo.
Right.
So she would get on and then she would say, like, you know, they're in Chicago. She, you know, put her hand over the phone and then tell her they're in Chicago. And we would all be like, oh, my God, they're in Chicago. Oh, yeah. There's a club there called Zany. Oh, my God. There's a club. At some point, I realized that I would never be, because I bombed a lot in Boston because I was just starting out. And guess what? When you're just starting out, you suck.
Right.
But the guys could bomb and nobody held it against them forever. Right.
But you were representing an entire gender.
Well, that was part of it.
Yeah.
Sure. But, you know, like I would bomb and I couldn't get work. The others would bomb and it was fun. Like, oh my God, you see Teddy? Oh my God, he ate it. And then he's, you know, yeah, we got him tonight.
Yeah.
You know, like there was no,
right.
The other
no
history.
Repercussion.
I was damned yeah. by everything I did. So I just had a feeling that I would never get anywhere just remaining there. And so I contacted the guys who had taken this trip and after, you know, when they got back and I got some, you know, names of places and I contact these places to see if I can come out and do like an open mic kind of thing. And so I get on a Greyhound bus. Back then you could buy a ticket book for $150. It was called an Ameripass. And it was a blank ticket book and you could have it filled in for anywhere you wanted to go. But that ticket book was only in effect for 30 days.
Wow. Okay.
So routing was very important. And so here's how I lived. Because I had no money or,
right.
you know, very, very little money.
And so a dream. You had a dream.
I had a dream. I was a little comic with a dream.
Right.
If I wanted to go, say, to Denver, right, I didn't have any place to stay. So here's what I would do. I would arrive, like, say, in the daytime sometime at the Denver Greyhound station. The bus would roll in. I'd get off the bus. I would put my suitcase in a locker. I would go and look at the schedule of departures and arrivals. And I would find a destination that was 4 hours away from Denver. And I would book myself, I'd get them to write me a ticket for the last departure to that 4 hour away destination, which might have been, say, midnight.
Right.
And I made sure that I was back at the station at midnight. I would take that bus 4 hours away, and then I would have a ticket written out to come back to Denver. And in that way, I got my 8 hours sleep.
Oh my God. That is fucking crazy. Wow.
I can't remember how many times I did it. I can't remember if I did, you know, more than, I don't recall anymore. I know I've done it more than once, but it was so long ago and I didn't, you know.
That is amazing. Thank God you didn't have a Fitbit that was saying you're not getting enough sleep, you know, like,
okay.
But did you feel well rested or?
Yeah. Like,
yeah, you were, yeah. Well, you were young. Yeah.
I love a Greyhound bus to this right. day. I can sleep anywhere. My problem is not, you know, trying not to sleep.
Right.
You know, I can doze off anywhere. My friend, Jim Morris, who was
impressionist. He did Clinton. He did really great Clinton. And Bush, he was great. Yeah.
It was very good. He had gone out to San Francisco and stayed. And so I had his, you know, so we had talked and he kindly invited me to stay at his apartment. And so when I arrived at the San Francisco Greyhound station, you know, I get on the payphone and I call Jim Morris and he doesn't answer. And this is pre-answering machine.
Right.
So, you know, I don't have anywhere to go.
Right.
Well, it was, I believe it was election day that when Reagan was elected. I believe it was that day was election day. Right. So I went to hear John Anderson speak because he was speaking in, I don't know, Union Square, whatever right. the hell. Near where I met a guy just that was there too. And we got talking and I told him, like, you know, that I just came from, you know, Massachusetts. I didn't have anywhere to stay. And I end up spending the day with that guy. And a couple different times I tried to call Jim Morris and I couldn't reach him. And this guy kindly allowed me to stay in his apartment. You know, I'll tell you, San Francisco was like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when someone was newly arrived, when someone, you know, when someone's found out that this is a newcomer.
Right.
The people who lived there, and they weren't generally natives, but the people who had a similar trajectory where, you know, oh yeah, I came a couple of years ago.
Right.
They delighted in showing you around. They delighted in welcoming you. It's not, to the best of my knowledge, like that anymore.
Right. It was a world of misfits. It was a place for others, you know? Well,
you know, tales of the city.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you know, when somebody found a newbie, they were like, hey. Yeah.
Come on. That is so crazy. And then you start working at the other cafe.
My favorite. Comedy venue ever, the other cafe.
You realize at this point, you know, coming from misogynist Boston, these people get me.
Yeah, it was I couldn't have designed a better audience.
Right, than right, right.
At the other cafe. And that location, that particular venue, only was there for 6 years. Now it's a different, it's a restaurant of a different sort.
Right.
And then the comics were weird and fun. Right. We had a good time. In fact, yeah. You know, a few years back now, they had a 30-year reunion of the other cafe. And it was so much fun. I mean, many of us hadn't seen one another in many years at that point. And sometimes I didn't even know that guy was this person that I used to hang out. I'd say to somebody, right. oh, that's blah, blah, blah. Like,
right.
Oh, my God. Time was not kind to right. all of us.
Right.
We spent a lot of the night just staring at one another. But it was really fun. I was up.
I don't think these comics don't understand that we were there all night. We hung out all night. I would MC so that I could develop material, I would get more stage time. Right.
I used to MC the open mic night frequently at the other cafe.
Right.
And that's really how I learned to do what I do.
And you got on stage more than anyone else. And each time you were on stage, it had to be its own strong thing, which was made. Yeah. And now that job is delegated to the least, it's like no one wants it, but I think it's the greatest job.
Did you ever have this experience, which is when you're working, when I was doing clubs and there was the MC and the middle act and the headliner.
Right.
I feel like I so often would have either the MC or the headliner, or maybe both, would come to me and say, could I recommend them? Would I tell the owner or the booker to move them to, the MC wanted to middle and the middle headline. And I used to look at them and say, here's what you should do. I go, especially the MC, I go, you should make yourself into the best fucking MC there. And I said, you can ask for more money, but you will get no end of work.
Right.
If you become the best
fucking MC. Right.
And don't worry about, moving.
Right.
I don't think one of them ever took my advice.
And the middle act had the cushiest job ever. It's like, here, do 20, 25 minutes, 20 to 30. And you're padded. You're padded. It doesn't matter. It's like, it was the easiest. Yeah. So when people don't know this. When in the 80s, the clubs would buy condominiums. And so they wouldn't have to pay for hotel rooms. And there was always, if there was a woman on the show, it was one. And you'd walk into these condos. Sometimes I would go in and the people were like, would move in, and you're like, which is my bedroom? It was all, I hated it.
I hated it. First of all, you felt like you were staying in the sperm covered furniture,
right?
Every fucking act that had to, right. Okay. The scene was a little on the lascivious side back then, such that they eventually, not always, but eventually the owners of the club would put up signs in the dressing room that asked the comics not to fuck the waitresses.
Right.
Because that was like a thing. And I swear to you, I forget where I was now, but I swear to you, I was at a club one time years ago and I overheard these waitresses going over the calendar to see who was coming in.
Right.
Because they were planning their sex lives.
Right. But, and I remember hearing all the comics going, oh, I'm going to the, Chuckle Hut in Iowa. And the comics would be like, oh, you can fuck Karen, Tiffany, and, blah, blah, blah. That's how they did it. They all knew who they were going to go fuck. It was crazy. Yeah. Sitting in a fucking disgusting room.
Yeah.
Reading.
Yeah.
Like, it was awful.
And they would have, a waitress would go over, once a week and vacuum.
Right. Right.
I stayed in some sleazy, slimy-ass place. And so I at a certain point, I started saying, I have to have a hotel. I just have to have a hotel.
Right.
And, I had this relationship with these different clubs back then, where I was friends with the guys who ran the club.
Right.
And which is nice. I looked forward to seeing them. We'd go out for lunch or, hang out, play basketball. I played a lot of basketball. Right. It was great. But when I would make a request for something, suddenly the friendship, you know, it was like, whereas if I had just been an asshole and not friends with them, I probably, right. But so I remember this one, I was working a place in, I think it was Virginia Beach, although I can't swear to it. Yeah, I think it was Virginia Beach. And so I'm told that I'm going to have a hotel. And they, you know, these guys pick me up at the airport. Great. Good to see you. Oh, it's, you know, great. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to do that together. Because this was back when you were in the same place for 5 nights.
Yeah. Ugh.
As we're driving from the airport, and I realized that we're getting more and more residential.
Right.
And like, there's no fucking way there's a hotel over this way. You know, pull up to this condo. And I'm so angry. But of course I don't say anything because so, you know, the guys are like helping me with my luggage and, oh, your room is up these stairs, you know? So then I thought I'll just live with it. And then I say to them, where is the phone? And this is again, pre-cell phone, where's the phone? And they say, we don't have a phone.
Oh my God.
They said, you know, the comics kept leaving us with bills, and so we don't have a phone. At which point, I swear to you, I'm not making this up. At which point, I'm walking up these stairs, and I turn, and I smash my head into the wall. And they're like, oh, oh. And they go, we do have a phone. They said, we do have a phone. We just don't like people to use it. We have a phone. And so it turns out that they have do you remember, I think it was Time Magazine or something at one point was when they were hawking their magazines on television, they had some sort of a deal where you could get a football phone.
Oh, yeah.
So they have like some fucking, got, you know, like shitty, you know, football phone thing that you can take. And they go, you have to, okay, we're going to let you use it. But nobody else can use it. Now there's an MC and a middle act that are staying in the same place. They go, you can use, but nobody else. So I have to plug it in and then put, and then unplug it and put it in a drawer. And I'm like, and I,
it's crazy.
So I'm like, okay, so there's a guy in, that's been told there's no phone. It's the middle act. He's in a different room. He doesn't hear me talking.
Right.
So eventually I go to the other act and I go, look, there's a phone. And I go, don't stick these guys with a bill. That would be bad.
Yeah, because we had to pay. You had to pay for long distance.
Right.
That's the other thing people don't realize. When you were on the road and even in a hotel, you couldn't call because that would eat up your entire check.
Oh, honest to God. And the hotels were particularly obscene.
The comforters. I can't.
The way they did.
The phone.
Was that. You had to go through the hotel line.
Press 9. Yes.
And you're paying your long distance fee with the phone company and you're paying a fee.
To the fucking hotel.
Nothing to hook that phone. Nothing. And you know, if you had a phone credit card number.
Yes.
So I was working in a place in outside of Detroit. I think I was staying at the Morgan Hotel, maybe it was called. And I get in. I think I had kids at that point, I think. And so, you know, I had to use the phone. I go to call and I can't make the credit card thing work. There's something about the hotel's phone that is stopping me from using the credit card thing. And so I call the front desk. I tell them there's a problem with the phone, but I have to use the phone. So I go ahead and just go direct through the hotel to make this long distance call. And the hotel ends up never sending anybody to fix the phone. And so I go to check out, you know, the next day or something like that. I go to check out and I get this bill that is enormous.
Right.
I can't believe it. And I'm like, wait a minute. So they never think. So I go down to the front desk and I say, look, there was a problem with the phone. And I let you know there was a problem with the phone. And I have to be able to use the phone. And so now there's this astronomical people, and I'm well aware that it doesn't cost you anything for, you know, this is just highway robbery. And I never complain. I mean, I'll complain to you about right. something that yesterday, but I never complain in an effective way, ever.
Right.
So this was very rare. So I said, and the woman goes, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about it. I go, I'd like to speak with the manager. And the manager comes out and she says, okay, we're going to give you 50% off. Well, that's like admitting that what right. they do.
Right.
Right. It's like if you catch somebody robbing your house.
Right.
And you're like, hey, that's my
yes.
computer. And they go, all right. We'll put the television back.
right.
You know, we're going to take everything else.
This is where being Jewish comes in handy because we are excellent complainers. You know, we're very good at it. Yeah. Hey, everyone. I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, they have palm trees, they have evergreens, they have houseplants, and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York, okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. Forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome. So now, Paula, there's three things I have to hit. Number one, you get on the Tonight Show with Johnny. Jimmy Stewart was on. I can't believe the guests you know, the people that were on.
I don't remember that.
And your set was so groundbreaking. First of all, you do a bit about Jimmy Stewart and Africa. You start, and I was wondering, was that, I mean, because your brain is incredible that, did she think of that right then? You did a bit about Jimmy Stewart because he was in that Africa movie. And then you go on with your set, which is just flawless. First of all, you talked about your cats, but then you talked about, I don't like sex. I don't like sex. And I thought, this is fucking amazing. Who has the enlarged balls to be that vulnerable and that honest to say, I mean, this is something people didn't talk about. And
Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend.
Yes. I mean, I watched that again yesterday and I just, it's amazing.
I don't remember any of this.
Yeah, you said, I don't like sex. And then you talked about wanting to have kids and that like, oh, and then you talked about, you know, Sam, I am, I don't want sex in the house. I don't want sex. It was just fucking, I was like, she is getting a huge laugh on national television in 1987, talking about a topic no one fucking talks about in the most palatable, hilarious. Johnny, was he nice? He seems cold. Yeah, cold.
You know, I can't remember. I can't remember what I did the show with Carson a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you know, what's funny about the thing about saying I don't like sex is that my managers at the time, I was with this company that had like, you know, five men that were the man, you know, it was a management company.
Wait, and it was Robin Williams, Dana Carvey, all them? Yeah. They loved you. Yeah. Okay.
Well, the management company, I don't think particularly, but there I was. And they used to tell me not to say that I didn't like sex.
Right.
I mean, I think they thought it was so weird.
I loved it. I was like,
Well, what I discovered about that was I think I had for so much of my life thought that I was so unique in so many ways. You know, that something that I thought or felt, I must be the only one.
Right.
And it turns out, I don't think there's anything you can say that you think or feel. You may have a larger group or a smaller group that has thought.
Right.
But you're not alone in anything.
Right.
And I think in America, you know, we all like to think that we're so
special. Yeah.
Oh, we're not. But the thing about that was that over time, it became sort of a more, I think I probably said it with more ease over time. And so it became like a more, the audience responded more.
Right.
I think I sort of committed to it more. But I can't. All right, here's what I remember about Carson. I think it was the first time I was on that this happened, but it might not have been. It might have been another time. You know how they do this silliness with the chair and the...
Yes.
Did you paddle or... Such crap. And you know, the only type of performer that had to sing for their supper like that was a comic.
Right.
You know, you come out and you do your stand up, and then it was always a thing as to whether Johnny would wave over. And it's all for the most part preordained.
Right.
If I talked about Jimmy Stewart in Africa, which I don't recall at all, it would definitely have been something I just decided to do.
Wow, that's fucking amazing.
Yeah. I mean, what the stress of the, I think part of the reason I don't remember those things very well is the stress was so colossal.
Right.
And foolish in retrospect. But there were, you know, when I was growing up, there were three television stations.
Same. Yeah.
And somebody literally would be that overnight success idea literally could take place as a result of someone being on The Tonight Show at all. Which a lot of people were good, but just that. So I think, you know, and then I had these, you know, managers that were creeping up my backside a lot of the time. So you expected, you were hoping for so much from that appearance.
Right.
And your expectations were so high that I think it just, you know, it crushed your brains.
Right.
It was really, really, really stressful.
Yeah, I remember standing behind that curtain when I did it with Jay the first time, you know, standing behind that curtain and having them count you. And then the curtain opens and you're like, oh my God, like it's so fucking scary.
I think especially the first time, you know, it's like the first time you go to Hollywood Boulevard, you're like, well, this is a shithole.
Right.
The Tonight Show, I was like, this is It's not even at night, for Christ's sake.
Right.
It's you know, everything about it just seems so not the showbiz that you thought you were going to. And so, I mean, I think part of it is you're sort of taking in like the, like,
oh, this is disappointing. Oh, I thought it was, yeah.
It's not really, oh, huh, yeah. No, not really.
I know, it's crazy. You then go on to do HBO. You did a Young Comedian special, Women of the Night, which I hated the name of those shows. You know, that was the women. Those were the ones where the women could go on. It was called Women of the Night. You did a one night stand.
Like
Yeah. You then became the first woman to host the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I have two questions about that. Were you more nervous about that than doing the Tonight Show, if you remember? I mean, that would be intimidating to me.
It was very intimidating. I'll tell you, it was a weird event.
Yeah.
I do a lot of, you know, award shows and, or used to in the before time, you know, a lot of association events, but you know, what the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the notion of it is that it is White House correspondents,
right,
reporters that are having this event. And many, many, many of these kind of, you know, annual galas make the same mistake, which is you're going to be able to do two or three things at any given gala.
Right.
And you have to decide which two or three things you're doing.
Right.
Are you entertaining the people in the room? Are you networking? Is it really a celebration of the work of somebody as so it's an award? Yeah. Are you presenting yourself? Are you showing you? Are you raising awareness to the greater population? Are you
raising money? Are you raising money?
Are you raising money? Are people, you know, networking so they want to talk?
Right.
Are you passing information to? Right. You have to know what you're doing in order to make sure that you do.
Right.
So the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the way it used to be, I think it used to be kind of, you know, the correspondents have become famous over the years, but they weren't always.
Right.
It was very
paid, sort of.
What's the Cary Grant, Rosalind Russell, His Girl Friday?
Right.
It was a very His Girl Friday kind of a group of people in the old days. They didn't have good accommodations in the White House. They really were.
It was before it was entertainment news. Like, news has become entertainment.
Right.
It was actually news then.
Right. And you wouldn't necessarily recognize the correspondents.
Right.
Although at the point at which I did it, you know, CNN, in fact, Charles Bierbauer from CNN back then was the head of the White House Correspondents Association or whatever it was. He's the guy that hired me. And originally, by the way, I was like, I don't think that's a good idea at all.
Right.
So I get there, and there was a lot of sort of events leading up to that event, all of which were fun. But I get there, and it's, you know, the dais, and you know, the important people sitting in important people chairs, and that room wasn't quiet. I mean, it might have been quiet when Bush, it was back when it was the first Bush. It might have been quiet when Bush was talking, but not when their brethren were talking. When Charles made a speech, you could barely even tell he was making a speech.
Right.
The whole room was talking because it was a networking. It was a thing where people wanted to be with each other. Well, then you have to allow them to do that.
Right.
And that's the fun part. Who are you at the table with? That's the fun part.
Right.
It was really not a fun performing experience. And the other thing that they used to do mistakenly, I believe, I mean, I didn't fit into this category, but like, I remember Clinton had that radio guy, it was one of the, you know, it was maybe pre-Howard Stern or
right
or early Howard Stern years.
As the comic, you mean?
Yes. I can't right. think of his name now, but he was, you know, provocative.
Right.
Incendiary. Ugly. He had like long, what the fuck was that guy's name? And then the next day.
I'm looking it up.
The next day in the news, it's boy, he, you know, he said some things people did. Oh boy, he was, you know, like, okay, what did you think you were getting?
Don Imus. Yeah,
it was Don Imus. So Don Imus goes on and he's very Don Imus.
Right.
They're like, oh Jesus, it was awful. Okay, yeah, because he doesn't
want. That's what you got. But when right. you did it, they talked about what you wore.
Yes.
I read that you thought, oh, that was the first time you realized, oh, this is what they do to women. Like I had never thought of myself as, you know, a female comedian or, you know.
The Washington Post the following day, was a, you know, Paula Poundstone in a white tuxedo. And by the way, it was a beautiful white tuxedo.
I bet it was.
But yeah, like how fucking weird. Does anybody know what Don Imus wore?
No.
But anyways, I don't think the event, and at the point at which I do it, it was also not televised.
Right.
I mean, there may have been a cameraman with that used a clip somewhere. Right. Televised. So I think as the years went on, you know, they tried to sort of,
Hollywoodize it. Like, yeah.
They watch like the Emmys or something.
Right.
So I don't know. It was fun in many ways. I was glad I was there. It's a lovely credit to throw on my resume.
Right.
But as a performing experience, you can pretty much drop kick it.
Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
I have one more question and then 2 more little questions. Is
okay.
that okay? Number one, crowd work. I was told I used to do so much crowd work because I MC. It's otherworldly, your crowd work. And the fact that you were able to do it on an HBO special, that you have been, you have these convictions and you don't stray from them. And the, and like, you are the queen of, well, I'm not genderizing, but your crowd work is amazing. And the fact that you love it and you love it. And I was always told, no, don't do crowd work. You can't do crowd. And I was like, that's my favorite part.
It is the best part, isn't it?
Yeah, it separates it from every other art form. There's no fourth wall. They become part of the show. It's like, and you're using your brain. You're,
Yeah. Plus, I have the greatest audience. That's part of the reason I stopped. I stopped working clubs. I work in theaters, and I don't have anybody open for me because honestly, I'm just too selfish.
Right.
They've come to see me, and I want to spend as much time with them as I possibly can. I love talking, you know, I love all the different careers that I've, you know,
yes,
honored, where are you from? What do you do for a living? And it also
becomes bits for me. It's like, then I can retell. I once had this to talk to this, you know, like, and it becomes a bit a lot of the time.
Well, that would be helpful to me, but my memory has been, I think it was kid ravaged to begin with. And then COVID,
yeah.
The stress of what's gone on for the last, well, honestly, for the last 6 years, I can't remember a goddamn thing anymore.
Right. Well, they hijacked your brain, Trump.
Yeah.
You also wrote, your kids weren't doing well in math, and you wrote math books. I mean, you're fucking amazing.
Well, let's know and think I'm good at math. I'm not. I wrote a series of math workbooks with my high school math teacher. And I just wrote the stories. She wrote the math. In fact, she had to explain some of the concepts to me in order for me to write stories so that they applied. Slope was challenging for me.
I hate it. It makes me crazy. Okay, my last two questions. Number one, we're very pro mental health. What do you do for your mental health? I know you exercise.
I do exercise. The answer is I don't do enough for my mental health. It has been, you know, it's been wonderful to get back to some road jobs. I started back in June. I don't know how long it's going to last. I think that the anti-vaxxers are hell-bent on creating a new variant that it's going to bring us. I have pets, and I do think it's a double-edged sword because it's a shitload of work taking care of them. But as a result of the fact that I have two big dogs, I walk most days.
Right.
And I do think that that's really helpful. I think my sleep is pretty well.
Same.
Because that's very important. And I consider it a badge of honor to be awake forever.
Right.
And I don't any longer. I because it's just, you know, you're not regenerating.
Right.
And I'll tell you, one of the things I think that's happened in terms of my work, I always love my work. It's the greatest job in the world. And I'm always aware of that. And there are times that even doing the greatest job in the world, I would feel, I don't know, somehow put upon.
Right.
Like I'd be working a lot and I'd feel like, oh my God, how come I don't get to pay to book?
Right.
And boy, being stripped of it for a year and a half.
Oh, I know.
So grateful. Gratitude.
I like that. Last question.
Just recognizing how lucky
and knowing. You're so great at what you do and you make people happy. All right. Now I call the podcast Kill Me Now, which is politically incorrect because I'm always aggravated. I always get annoyed and I'm always like, oh my God, kill me now. So what makes you crazy, annoyed, mad? Like what, where you're like, oh my God.
I don't like it when things happen at the same time. Like, and the thing is timing wise. So like I'll go a whole day where the phone never rang.
Right.
And then I'm talking to one person and you know, I'm like, how the fuck, how is that cat pee in places it doesn't belong?
Oh, yes. I remember that.
But in a more global sense, it's very, very, very hard for me to understand why the human race, after all that we've been through, doesn't know to love one another.
Oh.
It's frustrating.
Right.
And I don't hate the anti-vaxxers, but I'm pretty pissed at them.
Yeah, same.
You know, because I feel like, I don't understand. What? How could you?
Right. It's not about you. It's about other people. It's about other people.
Yeah. And I genuinely love people. You know, a naked guy with a gun could come up to me and whisper, and I'd go, I'm sorry. I don't feel suspicious a lot.
Right.
I genuinely love people. And maybe it's because, you know, I read the wrong books and watched the wrong movies.
Right.
I don't know. I'm an idiot.
But you can't lose that. You can't lose that.
Don't let those bastards get
Don't let them. Don't let them win. Paula, I can't thank you enough. Like, this is, I have 8 other million things I want to talk to you about. I think you are, I just adore you. I respect you on so many levels as a human being, as a mother. Is it Tosha? Toshia?
Tosha.
Tosha Marie Alice in Wonderland, Johnson Poundstone. You are one of a kind. You're so talented. You're so smart. And I thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I wish only good things for you.
Well, the same right back at you. I am an admirer of yours as well. I love it when we're together. It's not often enough.
And I want to play ping pong.
Oh.
And eat ring dings. And eat ring dings.
Oh, my.
And take off the tinfoil and make it really.
They don't use tinfoil anymore.
Oh, I hate fuck them. Like, oh, it's in the plastic. Shit.
Yeah. It's awful, right?
Yeah. Remember tinfoil. You used to make it and you used to iron it with your fingers?
Well, they used to have one that had a circle logo on it and you'd make like a button and you were in the ring ding. I was very high up in the ring ding club. Judy, thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much for listening to part 2 of Kill Me Now with the one, the only, Paula Poundstone. I mean, I'm speechless. I fucking love her. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. The podcast would not be possible without the help of Brittany Jo Sowards. Please subscribe. Please leave a review. 5 stars, not like my Uber review. I want 5 stars, people. 5 fucking stars. Buy my book. Yes, I can say that. When they come for the comedians, we're all in trouble. Go to my website, judygold.com. See all the new stuff I'm doing. If you didn't see me on Awkwafina, go watch me on Awkwafina, because Awkwafina is the fucking best. The show is great. And I happen to be on an episode of this season. Okay? I will be performing at in an area near you. I am scheduled to perform in Scarsdale, New York on October 23rd. Okay. I'll be in Provincetown for Women's Week for all the lesbies. And I'm going to be going to Florida on November 6th. But whatever, go to my website, judygold.com, and you'll see everything I'm doing and everything I'm not doing, but just stuff about me, and it's all about me. If you're not vaxxed, go fuck yourself. If you are vaxxed, please wear a mask. I double mask on the plane, you know, and in the airport. And I yell at people. I yell at people all the time. So if I'm not around in a few months because someone just couldn't take me anymore, I love you. So follow me on Twitter and Instagram for everything you need to know about me. That's at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, you know, like Jew, because I'm a Jew. Gold. What else do I have to say? Enjoy the new season, new beginnings, new. And if you're still listening, I can't tell you how much I love you. The fact that you haven't turned me off right now, I love you more than anything. And, you know, I think you're awesome. And don't let anyone else say shit about you, because you know you're fucking great. Anyway, thank you for listening. tell your friends about the show, do something nice for someone, take care of your mental health, go exercise, go be kind, and as we always say, so long!
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.